This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back. Welcome to the show. It is our very last episode in November of Action Movie Anatomy here on the Popcorn Talk Network. Today, we're talking about one of the most classic films ever made. It's Goodfellas. Get hyped. I'm hyped. See you guys in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
The eagle is back.
On audio, I am sorry for that.
People walking by the studio right now are not pleased.
Oh my goodness. We're back, man. We're back in the booth. We're back sitting here. It's November's almost over.
95 plus four pennies.
Yeah, right?
Add
that shit up, DRE. I'm white.
You are. Check out this sweet new logo we got. Look at this.
Yeah.
Look at these. These are amazing.
It was covered by a beard for a long time. We shaved the beard off.
And now it's shown up.
We have this incredible logo. Big shout to Stephen Lemieux for doing that one for us. Clap there. Thank you, Stephen. Today on Action Movie Anatomy, where we cover action movies on the show, we're going to be talking about Goodfellas. It's one of my favorite movies ever made. I'm very excited to talk about it. The Irishman hits theaters. It'll be on Netflix, actually, here in the next week, I think.
Hits Netflix hard.
Hits Netflix so hard, it drops. That's what the kids say. And, so that's what we're talking about today. My name is Ben Bateman. This is Action Movie Anatomy. That's Andrew Guy. If you guys want to follow along with all the cool stuff we're doing, you can follow us on Twitter at Team Action Show. You can follow me at Ben Bateman Media.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy. You can find the show at Team Action Show. And, you know, this really isn't an action movie per se, but it kind of is. I mean, like, there's a decent amount of action going on.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
it's intense.
The rules we generally follow on this show tend to be rule number one: the hero always plays by their own rules. I mean, they all kind of play by their own rules in the sense that, like, they aren't the establishment.
Yeah.
So kind of the hero. If the hero is Henry Hill,
it feels like he definitely does play by his own rules, I guess, even up until the end, because once he gets caught, he still plays by his own rules and not the mob's rules, and he rats everyone out.
Yeah.
Little rat.
He's a rat. Rule number two: the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, what have you, in the room.
I'd be a rat.
You'd be a rat?
If I had to go to jail for the rest of my life for 25 years, and I could go into witness protection.
Or die.
I'd be a rat. I'd go into witness protection. You're going to die in prison. You will die in prison. You will get stabbed or shanked or whatever.
So you'd rat me out?
I'd rat you out.
Guys, I'm going to need to go to the bathroom really quickly. Right here in the seat. Rule number two: the hero and the villain are the smartest people in the room, I think, is an interesting one, because it's like with movies like this, like, who are the smartest people in the room? The mob, they're smart because they, like, know how things work.
It's like this over... it's this all-encompassing mob. Like, the mob. You know what I mean? Because
right.
It's like, no matter what you do, at the end of the day, you can't beat out the mob. No matter, even Pesci, you know, they break the rules. You have to play by the rules.
Dong Johnson's, it's a good name, says there are no heroes in Goodfellas. That's fair. That's a fair point.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit what the end of the movie is supposed to be about. The rule number three: the movie is driven by police, military, political, mercenary figure. It doesn't follow that at all. And then rule number four: the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. There's like a fire. Stuff burns up.
Yeah, right? Don't they blow up a building? He blows up the cars when he's young.
Yeah, he blows up the cars. That happens. So, yeah, those are the rules that we usually follow on the show. Today, we are going to give a quick shout-out to new patrons of Sally Mercedes and Zachary Schatz. Thank you so much. We salute you. That's patreon.com/teamaction.
There's... you just punch our patrons? Ryan?
Nelson? I might have. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Sound effect punch? Were you just seeing if we were paying attention?
Sally?
Or...
I might have been seeing if you're paying attention.
Sally and Zach. I'm sorry.
I really apologize.
But yeah, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/teamaction. There's lots of cool stuff we do there. We do exclusive content and streams, and we have this cool show we're doing called the Action Face-Off. I'll talk to you guys about it a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, we put up a reaction last night of your latest Schmodown match that dropped yesterday.
The Crimson Fury match. So that's living exclusively for patrons right now. So if you're Schmodown fans and you want to hear what we have to say behind the scenes about the matches and what really happened, then go check that out.
Check it out.
So yeah, coming up today on the show, we are going to be talking about all the fun games we're used to. Fist pump moment, thesis statement, favorite line, all those things. We also have kind of a fun impression game, so to speak. We're gonna play a little later, probably in lieu of Cruz versus Cage. Then again, we may just
play Cruz versus Cage.
I think we'll get into the first part of the show here, and that is going to be your thesis statements, your biggest, boldest thought about the film. This is the thing that when you talk about this movie to someone, you say, you know, here's the thing about Goodfellas. You say it, and you're like, I have no better, bigger, or, you know, more hyperbolic point to make. The greatest, the first, the only, the last. And I'll jump in first with mine, because I thought about it on the way here, and I feel pretty confident in saying Goodfellas is the best movie of the 1990s. Goodfellas is actually the best movie of that decade. And we're talking a lot about the best movie of this decade right now, and I think it's harder to do when the decade is still happening.
Yeah.
But and Goodfellas has become almost... it's almost like a parody of itself at this point, because people talk about it as this iconic classic great so often. So a lot of the things have been spoofed, right? Like Funny Clown, all that stuff. But the truth of the matter is, if you look up any list of the top movies of the 90s, you're going to see Goodfellas pretty high up on that list. And when I compare it to the other movies that are in contention, you're talking about like Silence of the Lambs and Schindler's List, and you're talking about Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump and Saving Private Ryan. These are some of the movies that come up on people's lists.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised at your thesis. I mean, you just listed a couple movies that I actually enjoy more in Pulp Fiction and in Saving Private Ryan. I think they're better movies all around.
I think for me, Goodfellas, the reason I say that it's the best movie of the 90s is not only do I think Goodfellas is a remarkable piece of filmmaking. I mean, it feels extremely compelling, very well acted. I love the writing. It's got humor. It's exciting. It really hooks you in the first 20 minutes of the movie. Like, it's the and there's a lot about it, you know, that's iconic, as we mentioned.
It's so funny you say that, because we're going to get into it a little bit in the production development, but in the first 15 minutes, I felt the same way.
Yeah.
It's just like The Departed. I think that Scorsese has a really, really great knack for just, like, getting you in his world and on his story instantly. Because, like, in the beginning of Departed, since it's more hits home for me, I remember just like, it feels like you're getting on, it's like the ticking on a roller coaster ride.
It's
the same thing in Goodfellas, except for you can already see the double loop.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
I mean, and there's great things. There's great things about this movie that I think why it speaks to people, because they start with Henry Hill's point of view, and you're him as a kid, and you're experiencing with it's romantic and cool and sexy in a way that Wolf of Wall Street, while it's similarly compelling, it's also similar. They're pieces of shit.
Yeah, all of them.
Pretty much the whole entire, all of them. And even though these guys are criminals and you don't exactly agree with them, there is this like sense of community and family that I think draws you in at the beginning of the movie when he's a kid. Mm-hmm. You want to be friends with Paulie. You want all these guys. And then when it changes perspectives to Karen later in the movie, and she's so good, you get to experience this world through her eyes, the tracking shot, things like that. I just think this movie is so rewatchable. It's so memorable. It's done so well. It does so many of the things the genre wants, and I think it's a really rewatchable genre.
She maybe is just the best actor in this whole movie.
Yeah,
honestly, like
performance.
I think Pesci's amazing, but he's also given so much fun to work with.
Yeah,
whereas
like
Bosco's given so much real to work with.
Yeah,
she does such a good job. I like your thesis. I don't agree with it, but I do like it. for me, I think I just have to say, and you mentioned it, I think it's the greatest single take in film history because of the amount of work that they do, the story that they tell throughout, the kind of fun falling in love feeling you get between the two of them.
Yeah.
It's like, you're like, I'd go home with him.
Yeah, right?
Like, after you walk through the club, you're like, that guy. You just gave everyone 20s. He's like, that's not a big deal. Yeah, that's all right.
I love in that take, and we're going to talk a little more about that take, how much they make it about you're experiencing what she's experiencing.
Yes.
And I think that that's the most fun part about that take, is from the second they get out of the car, the music is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And
music's like, perfect throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So good.
Yeah, I mean, it's very famous for that. It's like people remember a lot of these songs for these scenes. But like, she, you know, you're just gonna leave your car here, and he's like, it's easier than parking it in a garage. You know, the way he says all the things to her.
It's all so just like matter of fact. Yeah, we got to hear on the screen, which is it's amazing, and the choreography that goes behind it, and it's fun. It's busy. You're in the back. Like, how the hell do you even know where you're going? You know, there's so many doors and walkways, and it's like, it's just perfect, and he's so good in this scene. And then, yeah, you know, the other line he says, he's like, I like to go in this way. It's better than waiting in line. And then he kind of laughs.
And I love too, like, you know, they're walking through here in the scene, and there you see all these guys are making food. They're cooking, and it's like all these guys. You wonder, like, how many times have they seen Henry Hill or some other wise guy walk through here? And they know not to even acknowledge them. Who there knows to never ask a question? Who is this?
Yeah, don't say anything. If anything, you're just smiling. I love the table. I love the table.
They carry a table over to the best spot.
Through a nice club to the very, very best spot.
They put the light on it. They turn the light on. It's like when you see the scene, you're like, how would you not just be like, and the best part about this is that this is coming off of the first date they go on, where he's just
where such a dick.
Cell phones don't even exist yet, but he's basically on his phone the whole time.
Exactly, exactly.
and I love she goes and finds him, and she gets in his face, and like, and even like, she's so mad, but within 2 minutes they're flirting already.
She's like, Henry, you're gonna have to make it up to me. It's so good. It's trouble. It's like it's exactly when you hear like an older person talk about young love, and like, that's trouble. It's like you watch that scene, and you're like, she's in trouble.
Yeah, one thing about this movie that I actually and we can talk about this a little bit more in a second, but I do think I thought about it more with The Irishman and the de-aging. I think that the actors cast in this movie and the age they are directly referenced to be at certain points of the movie feels totally unbelievable. Like,
I mean, the fact that like De Niro is as old as he is when Henry first meets him, and then like they're the same, they feel like the same age later in the movie.
Yeah, like De Niro is supposed to be in his late 20s. He couldn't have been older than his late 20s when he shows up. And you're like, maybe you look 40, but like you could kind of get away with it.
And then Henry is supposed to be like 21
when he meets
he's
Karen.
Like 35.
yeah. So both of those, but you know, whatever. That's.
So really quickly, I gotta give a shout in the chat here. We got a VIP in the chat.
Okay,
it's a Miss Steph Sabra.
Steph Sabra
hanging out. She's talking about how much she loves this scene. I wish we'd have brought you on the show, Steph.
Yeah, that would have been perfect.
Have you seen Knives Out yet? I'm pretty sure she has. We could bring her on for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're glad you're here, Steph, hanging out. Steph is the greatest, guys. Go and follow her on Twitter. Go follow her on Instagram. She's just cool. She's just cool. She was on here with me on Deadpool. It was a great show. So back to Goodfellas. Those are our thesis statements. Let us know if you guys have any other great thesis statements in the chat. I just think it's the greatest, man. It's the best single take.
Yeah, we're discussing, and I think seriously leaning into doing a tracking shot inspired episode on the Action Guys this week, and that's kind of inspired by this. I mean, I found when I watched this scene last night, and again, I've seen this movie probably, I don't know, this is probably the 12th or 13th time I've watched this movie. I've seen this movie as many times as I've seen most of my favorite movies, and it's in my top 10 favorite films ever.
My third time.
But watching the tracking shot again last night, I honestly was like, my jaw was dropped. I was enjoying it so much, almost like in a way I never had before.
Yeah.
Maybe just like the last couple years of my life, I've watched so many more movies than I ever have before. I appreciate the great ones. I also think there's something to be said now at this point in our life. We've done the show for so many years. We've been critics and on these shows, like, when you watch a movie that you believed was one of the best movies ever made when you were younger, and you watch it now and it still feels that way, that's like such a wonderful feeling. It's not a feeling that I get that often, because I've had a lot of movies that I really, really remember thinking were fucking amazing. And I watch them now and it's like I still like them, but I don't find myself as compelled to watch them. I think I found that when we watched Children of Men on this show. I still thought it was great. I loved it. It wasn't as enchanting as it once was. Like, it didn't inspire me to want to talk about it or watch it again, and that does happen. And like, this movie for me is exactly what I wanted it to be. I was so in love with watching it again, every part of it.
I mean, it just sucks you in. I mean, it's one of the beautiful things about Scorsese when he is firing at his highest level. you're just, you don't want it to end. This movie's long, but it's great. And I guess people talk about the third act falling apart, not falling apart, but getting a little boring, but that's, you have to have that
in
the movie.
It's a bummer. Yeah, John Rocha says it. He's just like, I hate the ending.
You can't just have them having a great time killing people and getting away with it and just cheating on their, like, you can't just do that for 2.5 hours and then end the movie and they're still on top.
Yeah.
It feels wrong.
Right. Totally. So those are going to be our thesis statements, guys. Sound off in the chat here if you have any you want to share as well. We're going to keep moving through the show here today. The next thing we do on the show is called Fist Pump Moment. Now, this is the moment where something happens in a movie, and you just kind of, like, look around. You're like, are you seeing this right now?
Yeah.
This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. This is so good! And fist pump, it can be anything. I mean, it can be a touching look between father and son, the title music on a movie, a great kill, a wonderful fight.
Could be the end credit song in a movie.
The moment when you realize that the air conditioning is clearly not on in the studio. Ryan Nilsson up in the booth.
Yes, call me out.
He will never turn it on. I actually, every day when I get here, I tell him to turn the heater on until the show starts and then turn off the AC.
It's a running bit we have.
It's great. It's really funny.
Years ago, when Drew was in perpetual moon face mode of his life, he would sweat often. And then he was like a boxer losing weight for every fight. He just kept... Now... He doesn't sweat anymore.
I don't.
He also wears short sleeves more often.
Yeah, well, smart. Whose fault is that?
It's a fair point. Fair point.
I have adjusted to the climate. I had to.
And I have adjusted the temperature.
Thank you.
So it's funny, because Fist Pump Moment, you called me right before I got to the tracking shot.
Yeah.
When last night when I was watching the movie, and I watched it twice. It's like a 3-minute tracking shot, and I watched it from beginning to end twice. It was so good, and I want to use it as my fist pump. We've already talked about it so much. I actually have another fist pump.
Yeah,
I really love it. It's when he gets pinched as a kid.
Yeah,
like you popped your chair, and they're all cheering for him. You're like, but he just got in. This is fucked up.
Yeah.
This is not how this is supposed to go. You know, like it's so you should good. Be getting in trouble. Like you should be reprimanded. But the feeling of that, and he's like, it's almost like. You're kind of in, kid.
Yeah.
You're kind of in. You did the right thing. You didn't rat on anybody. You took your time like a man, and you're one of us now. I love that moment.
I think for me, the one that I'll go to, it's funny because I also kind of want to use the tracking shot, but the one I'll go to, and this is, again, this speaks to just like my memory of this movie as a kid, because I think this was the first crime movie, like real crime movie I'd ever watched. I could have been older than 6 years old when I watched this movie, maybe 7. Like,
damn.
I remember, I've told this story before, but I know my dad, brother, sister, and I were on a trip of some kind, like maybe a ski trip or something. We were staying somewhere. We had one night we had to stay over somewhere, and it was in like a cabin we were renting or something. And that cabin had like a big cabinet that had like 200 or 300 VHS tapes,
mm-hmm.
and they had a VCR and a TV. This was like 1994, 1995 probably, 1994. And it was like, okay, so what are we going to watch? And I just remember it was Reservoir Dogs or Goodfellas, because my family showed me fucked up crime movies when I was a little kid, and my brother loved Tarantino, and so we chose Goodfellas. I didn't know the difference, but I just knew these were two movies that my dad and my brother, who were the oldest people there,
you've been talked about.
They said these were the movies we should choose, and we watched Goodfellas. And I have a lot of memories from this movie as one of the first movies like this I ever watched. And there's stuff, one of the scenes that I mean, there's so many, but one of the scenes that I always, always, always remember is when he gets the call from Karen that the dickhead from the country club has thrown her out of the car. And you haven't really seen Henry do anything violent at
Nothing.
This point. Nothing. He's been, and he just like gets up, and like the guy is such a fuckhead.
I know.
He's like, what, you a fucking problem, man?
Yeah.
He's like, you want some of this?
And he's like
pistol whips him like 9 times. You're like, I feel like he cracked his skull.
Oh, dude, that guy would be dead.
Yeah.
Like, that guy would be on the verge of death.
And he puts a gun in his face, and he's like, if you touch her, and then he stands up, and the guy's like, don't shoot!
Don't shoot, man!
Hey, man, don't shoot! But it's just, it's like, it's such a violent scene, but, and I think it's one of the reasons that an Irishman, and, you know, you guys, if you haven't seen it yet, there's a lot of stuff you're going to watch in The Irishman that feels like throwback stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's that scene, a similar scene, you know, where his daughter gets pushed or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think in that scene, that's one of the reasons in our review I talked about it. It's like, I just felt like I had seen too much of that stuff before. I knew it was coming too often. And this was like the first time I had seen something like that. And it's like Sign of the Times, but it also then the way she reacts to it right after, she's like, I knew most of my girlfriends would get out of there if their boyfriend gave her a gun. But I'll be honest, it turned me on.
Yeah, she hides the gun. She's crazy, man.
I love Lorraine Bracco.
I know.
And that scene, yeah, I love a lot of
this. I mean, because it's just one of those easy, like, set him up, knock him down scenes, right? You meet him early on. He's like, who's that guy? I'm like, oh, he's a neighbor.
I love when he meets him, too. He, like, barely looks at him. He shakes his hand without looking at him.
Yeah,
at
the club. It's so good.
He's like, get out of here, man. Yeah. I know what you are.
And I just... It's again, it's like, I mean, I know this movie came out in 1990 and I'm sure it happened before, but it's why when movies do it so well, it feels like it's never happened.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the first time a dick bag guy's done something in the
right.
And then the lead character went and kicked his ass. You're like, no, it's probably happened 100 times.
Yeah.
But it's something about the way they do, and the fact that she's sleeping.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's like the fact that she's sleep, cause she's like, you know, she's dozed off by the time they get back to the house. There's something about her being asleep that Scorsese is a director that's genius, because she's gone from probably one of the most traumatizing moments she's ever been in.
Yeah.
Knowing that she's about to go to this confrontation, but she's with Henry now.
Yeah.
So she's asleep because she's comfortable. She's safe. She's guarded. And it's something about that too. It's so much that he does without actually ever saying it.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things about that scene specifically, was her sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's awesome. It's just great. It's just truly great. Yeah. So guys, share your fist pump moments here in the chat. I want to know what you guys think. Let's see here.
Denizio's got the exact same one as you.
Yeah. Kameh Egan says, my fist pump moment is when Pesci is supposed to be made, but instead killed for killing a made man. Oh no,
that's such a. I feel so sad in that moment, but at the same time. Do you like Pesci?
No. He's at that time. I don't think you're really supposed to. I think you're supposed to know.
That's what happens to those guys.
Yeah, like if you've ever known anyone, if you've ever had a friend or a family member in your life, you know, maybe one of your friend's boyfriends or something, a girlfriend who's kind of crazy, always starts shit, walks around with a chip on their shoulders, just kind of seemingly always getting into it with people. You're like, the reason that you don't want to hang around people like that is for exactly reasons like this movie,
it's
which
gonna
is
going to happen. Something bad's going to happen eventually.
And the stakes in this world are that you kill someone and then you get killed for it.
Yep.
But, like, you know, it's just an analogy for, like, regular non-violent life where it's like, well, maybe you're hanging around with the person who, you know, always leaves early from work. Now you're going to get associated with that person. You know, it's like, that's, like, why you do shit like that. It's like that person, you know, rubs off on you, that kind of thing. So I think when he dies, it's sad
because it's after he kills the kid. That's the biggest problem. It's
Michael Prioli, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why?
Yeah.
Just because you're a psycho. You shoot him in the foot, so he says, fuck you, and you kill him?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
Well, there's also, I think one of the other wonderful things about this movie is there's so many guys that are in this world, this mafia world, that would show up later in other projects. Like, The Sopranos, like, half the cast of this movie shows up in The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah. There's so many people that are just like, oh, you're in mob movies.
Yeah. Pauly Walnuts shows up at the beginning of this movie for a second. He ends up as a... That kid, Michael Imperioli, that's Christopher. He's one of the main Sopranos.
Isn't the kid that Henry Hill's with at the end of the movie in the car, is that the... He's like, I'm not a cop. I'm your fucking cousin. Is that him?
Oh, interesting.
As a kid from The Departed?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it is. I was looking at the scene at the end, because at the very end of the movie when Henry's losing his mind, he picks up the kid for a little bit. I'm like 99% sure it's him, but I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, the last and most important character from this show that ends up in Sopranos, obviously, is Lorraine Bracco. She ends up as Melfi, one of the two main characters in the show. Anyway, guys, we're going to continue moving on through the show here. A little indigestion apparently going on. We are going to start talking about star profiles, where these guys were in their careers. So it's interesting we list two here. We usually go through two.
Yeah, I'll probably pull Pesci's up as well.
Yeah, and maybe Bracco too. Honestly, okay. she gets an Oscar nom for this one for supporting actress.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Leota, interestingly enough, really had been known the previous year for Field of Dreams in 89. That's like the thing that he showed up in that most people remember him from, because... He only has a couple credits, you know, Dominic and Eugene 88, I don't know, and Something Wild is the Jeff Daniels movie. You know, so that's 86. So, like, really, it's Field of Dreams into this. He gets cast, I think, in Goodfellas because of Field of Dreams, where he plays Shoeless Joe Jackson.
It's an interesting
segue. Yeah, jump, you know?
Yeah. I have not seen Dominic and Eugene or Something Wild. I've seen Field of Dreams, obviously.
Yep.
He's good in it. I'm not the biggest fan of Ray Liotta.
Yeah, interesting.
I really like him as Henry Hill. I think that he's the weakest actor in the movie.
Hmm.
But there's just something about him where I feel like he should have been a bad guy instead of a good guy. I don't know why.
Well, yeah, I mean, he does end up playing a lot of bad guys over the years, you know, in a lot of crime movies, too. I mean, I can't remember the movie where he, like, drives someone out he like drives someone like way far out, like he's gonna kill him because he's a crooked cop. I think it's The Place Beyond the Pines. He drives Bradley Cooper way out somewhere, and he's a kind of a corrupt cop.
Okay,
he's kind of a corrupt character in Copland. He's in that. You know, Leota shows up in a lot of stuff. I mean, he's in Identity. He had a pretty big career, mostly based on this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, especially basically does Field of Dreams and this, and then from then on, he's like real famous. He's like A-list famous at that point.
Which makes sense. I mean, you talk about two of the biggest movies ever made.
Yeah.
And he's a big part of them. Pesci recently, or he did Barry's Wedding or Betsy's Wedding in 1990. He also did The Legendary Life of Ernest Hemingway in 89 and Lethal Weapon 2 is Leo, obviously.
In, Leo Getz.
1989. So it does feel like it's just because of, I guess, Once Upon a Time in America plus, I mean, he's in Raging Bull. He's just around. He's been working. He'd already been working for a while.
Because his breakout is Raging Bull, and that's 80. And he had to be. He was working at a nightclub, apparently, famously. He didn't want to do it.
He's been told. I've heard so many stories about people just like, Joe Pesci just is like, nah, I don't want to do it.
I don't want to act, right? Yeah. So, like, and he gets kind of convinced to do it. And that kind of breaks his career wide open. And then, you know, he has a career, basically. Really, he has like a 10-year run, like a big 10-year run.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about the whole Pesci thing. He had a music career, and he released. Yeah. He released an album shortly after he did Goodfellas.
I love that when we mentioned this, we were talking to John Rocha and Mark Rylance. They were like, oh, yeah. And then, like, one of them listed the song name. The other was like, yeah, I had that on my phone or whatever.
I'm a wise guy. He has a rap single called Wise Guy where he's rapping.
I bet it's really real good.
Ryan, if you want to... Yeah, Ryan's
way ahead of me. Oh, I've heard this entire album.
I'm a wise guy.
You've heard
guy.
The whole album?
I've heard the whole album. And there's a crazy one called 21 that...
That's I love that you heard the whole thing.
Yeah, Wise Guy is pretty classic. He's full on rapping. He's going, you know, he's going Shaq before Shaq did Shaq.
I need this in my life.
Right here.
Okay, it's gonna queue up, and then we'll talk a little bit about De Niro and Bracco's careers.
It's the bitches that'll get you.
It's the bitches that'll get you, right?
Vincent LaGuardia Bambini is the name of his album.
It's the bitches that'll get you.
Wait till you hear it.
I'm a wise guy.
Is that him?
No.
I just stop by.
That's definitely him.
With a couple of guys.
That's him.
Oh, wow.
And I take your eyes.
He takes your eyes.
I'm a wise guy. I'm a wise guy.
But I think I think the verse he like properly raps, right? Right?
I made man in fact like my ass is fat. Catch Joe in Bermuda, throwing him back.
Yeah, right?
Put the president on hold, tell him I call him back. Totally zone.
Put the president on hold,
tell him I call him back.
Yeah, she's acquitted.
I'm a drive by. I take your eyes.
Freak scenes with your wife last time I hit it. Cause I'm
that
it's amazing.
Is appallingly good.
When I heard it a few weeks ago for the first time, I was like, this feels like this is a joke.
Yeah.
Like somebody is spoofing.
It's like
him.
Andy Samberg dressed up as Joe Pesci, right?
But that's real. That's entirely real. That's I think he just released a new album.
God.
I think he just released a new album.
What?
Yeah.
Like now?
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a Christmas song out, I think.
Are you joking?
And he curses and he calls Santa like a fat piece of shit in the first like minute, I think, or something like that.
We You're probably like, don't... I think
it's called Pesci ... still singing.
Yeah, there you go.
Wait, that's the name of the song?
It's the name of the album.
Oh, okay. That makes a little bit more
Amazing.
Sense.
Well, because he had done an album long ago, like before that one. The Vincent LaGuardia Bambini, he had done an album like back in the 70s.
Okay.
Like, he wanted it, like music was like a thing he liked. So anyway, it's totally crazy. So let's talk De Niro, because he's, when you look at the box cover for this movie, he's front and center.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because it doesn't actually feel like he's the main character. He still feels like a supporting character in this movie.
Yeah, he definitely feels like a supporting character to Henry Hill, but it makes sense. It's De Niro in a Scorsese movie. He did Stanley and Iris in 90, We're No Angels in 89, and Jackknife in 89, which I actually don't know those movies. I mean, I know We're No Angels, but I've never seen any of them.
Yeah, I've seen Jackknife, I've seen We're No Angels, I've never seen Stanley and Iris. He's like so much more famous than all
Anyone
the rest of the cast
movie.
At this point.
Yeah,
because like by 1990, you know, you would say it's like De Niro and Pacino came out around the same time. They started like blowing up around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But then Pacino's 80s were bad. Like aside from Scarface, he like isn't really in very many movies. His big comeback is kind of the 90s. De Niro is not that at all. De Niro
80s are wonderful to him.
70s and 80s. I mean, he's just crushing it left and right. Like this comes out in 90, but like he had won his Oscar in 80 for Raging Bull. He had won a supporting Oscar in 72 in 74 for Godfather Part II. And in the midst of all that, he follows this up with Cape Fear. He's got like, I mean, if you look up his career in the 80s, it's crazy. There's a million movies.
Some
like
comedies
just,
in there.
Yeah, 82. Mm-hmm. I think it's 82, but Yeah, I was curious. I'm almost positive that he got an Oscar nom for this as well.
And then you look over at Lorraine Bracco, and she did Sea of Love in 1989, but her scenes were all deleted. She did Up to Date in 89, The Dream Team in 89, and also Sing in 89. So she was in four movies that were released in 89, one of which she was deleted out of, or edited out of. That's a Pacino movie, which I don't really know anything about. Mm. And again, I'll say it. I truly do think she's the best. Her and Pesci are the best actors in this movie by a mile.
You mean in terms of their performance in the movie?
In the movie,
yeah.
In the movie specifically, yeah, yeah. I'm not gonna say she's a better, you know,
actor than De Niro.
De Niro.
He didn't get the Oscar nom for this. I think because, you know, Pesci got it. They probably pushed for Pesci instead of De Niro.
Yeah, because he can't. I think they both would go supporting.
Yeah,
and Pesci wins it, which he should.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a career making performance for Joe Pesci. It's the most memorable thing he ever does. He has super memorable scenes, but yeah, I mean, De Niro. The other thing I noticed is, when De Niro shows up in this movie, I like so much how cool he feels. Like, when he first walks into that bar, and he's like, Jimmy Conway, everybody knew him around town, you know, he
gave the doorman $100 just for opening the door.
Just for opening the door, and he gives him the money, and he's like, keep him coming. And he's like, I want to meet you, introduce you to Henry the Kid. And you're like,
yeah, he just leans over, gives him the 20.
And you, like, look at De Niro, and you're like, you're just the coolest. Like, if I met you and I was Henry, I would think you were actually the coolest thing that had ever happened.
And he does.
And the way he says,
I need to be that guy.
And he says, he's like, you know, but the thing Jimmy liked most was stealing. He loves stealing just to steal. He's the guy that rooted for bad guys to win in the movies.
I wrote that down. He's the type of guy that roots for bad guys in the movies.
Yeah,
I love that line. There's so many great lines in this movie. It's
so memorable.
It's funny because all the most iconic ones almost overshadow one. But you just listen to the movie and just this little dialogue they have, you're like, that's a gem.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful line right there.
And I also think there's something about, so we'll continue kind of going through the movie here a little bit, but I think you talk about the different scenes in this movie and the things that have lived on for people. It's lines, it's scenes, it's even just visuals. I mean, we talked about the tracking shot. You talk about cutting the garlic with the razor blade.
I know.
It's one of the most memorable scenes in the whole movie.
It's like, why?
Yeah.
What is it about that garlic?
He's like, he had this amazing way of doing the, you know, where he would liquefy in the pan.
Yep. Liquefy in the pan. You think about that. He's like, you know, blah blah blah, you always have the greatest sauce. It's a little too oniony for my taste,
but it's still a good sauce.
They're
always cooking. Yeah, it's really really funny. It's it just works so well. So let's talk a little production.
Because again, it romanticizes all the worst things in life. Like you're a murdering, stealing, cheating on your wife gangster who's probably gonna die.
Yeah,
and then you're gonna go to jail. And you're like, that all looks awesome.
Yes, so awesome. So Goodfellas is based on New York crime reporter Nicholas Pileggi's book, Wise Guy. Martin Scorsese did not intend to make another mob film, but he saw a review of Pileggi's book, which he then read while working on the set of The Color of Money. I forgot The Color of Money. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
He had always been fascinated by the mob lifestyle and was drawn to Pileggi's book because it was the most honest portrayal of gangsters he had ever read. After reading the book, the filmmaker knew what approach he wanted to take to begin Goodfellas like a gunshot and have it get faster from there, almost like a 2.5-hour trailer. Oh, that's cool. I think it's the only way you can really sense the exhilaration of the lifestyle to get a sense of why a lot of people are attracted to it.
That's cool.
Scorsese saw Goodfellas as the third film in an unplanned trilogy of films that examine the lives of Italian Americans from slightly different angles. He's often described the film as a mob home movie that is about money because that's what they were really in the business for.
That makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, talking a little bit about Scorsese here and kind of where he was in his career by 1990, you know, I don't know how much more famous Scorsese got after this movie, if you think about it. Like,
I mean, do you feel like he just was?
By the time this comes out, he's been making movies for 15 years prominently. Like, over 15, but he's been...
Big-time movies.
Yeah, I mean, like, Taxi Driver is mid-60s, and Raging Bull is 80, and you have movies in there like King of Comedy, and you have movies in there like The Last Temptation of Christ and Color of Money. I mean, these are big-time movies that are winning Oscars, that are being nominated for Oscars. So by 1990, when he makes this movie, there's a lot of fanfare and a lot of hype, but I was actually thinking about the movies that he makes in the 90s after this, and it's like, I mean, Cape Fear is pretty memorable. It's good. I like 91's Cape Fear, but it's definitely not as famous as his
Cape
other Fear's, stuff.
It's not bad. Yeah, De Niro's weird in it.
Yeah.
Super weird.
Casino is like the less unique version of this.
I just don't remember it all, but I know you watched it recently. You said it's still really good. It's
fantastic. I mean, like, Bringing Out the Dead is really forgettable. Kundun is really forgettable. Like,
yeah, we have actually a really good question, a question of the day about Scorsese's career.
It feels like it's not until Departed that he really makes another movie that's like,
oh yeah,
that
you.
Level.
Yeah.
You know, and then his last 10 years since Departed, he's had a bunch of movies that were super memorable again. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I would argue there's a, I think there's a decent argument that he's the most consistent director ever. Like, the quality of what he's made out of his career, if I put, like, let's just say we were going to compare him to Spielberg. Like, yeah. Let's just say those are probably the two people that you put in the running for, like, number.
They both have a decent amount of misses later in their career as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that some of that's a little subjective. I know there's some people that are huge Spielberg fans. I'm not the biggest fan, but if I think about the top 10 movies, just to even have a top 10 movies that chart where you're like, you've made 10 great movies, is something very few directors can say. I mean, Kubrick made 13 movies.
Period. Yeah.
You know, like...
like, when we did the Spielberg top 10 over on Collider, it was a very, very tough top 10 to get through.
Yeah, because you have to be prolific, you have to make movies for a long time, and you have to be successful enough both critically and financially with your career that studios will continue to let you make these movies. Even, like, somebody like a Coppola, like, Coppola doesn't have as long of a run because he stopped making movies people gave a shit about in the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Scorsese literally is releasing The Irishman right now to, like, massive, massive fanfare. His last few years have just been, like, stacked. You know what I mean? It's like Wolf of Wall Street into Hugo that gets, like, 9 Oscar nominations, and you have Silence in there with major actors, and you've got, like...
I forgot about Silence.
Yeah, I mean, it's every movie he makes is a big deal.
So Nicholas Pileggi is the guy who wrote the book, nonfiction book called Wise Guy, which this is loosely based off of. That's what the screenplay was based on. He co-wrote the script for Goodfellas, and according to Pileggi, Scorsese cold called him and said, "I've been waiting for this book my entire life." And Pileggi replied, "I've been waiting for this phone call my entire life," which I can only imagine what it would be like. I mean, it's like that thing in the movies. It's just like fighting with my family.
Yeah.
It's like, this is calls. The Rock. It's like, bullshit. Yeah, and he just hangs up on him. You're like, could you imagine if Scorsese just called you one day?
There's a scene like that in the movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg.
I don't know if you've seen it. It's very good.
Steel Dragon calls him and he's like, "Look, you're just messing with me. I get it." And then, anyway.
Yeah. So according to Pesci, improvisation and ad-libbing came out of rehearsals where Scorsese let the actors do whatever they wanted. And then he would make transcripts of these sessions and he'd take some of the lines the actor said that he really liked and he'd end up putting those in the principal photography scripts they'd actually shoot with. And what's crazy about this is the scene where Tommy tells a story and Henry's responding and he starts laughing, you know, the funny how do I amuse you scene. Right. That's all based off of something that actually happened to Pesci that he witnessed happen to someone else.
Wow.
And Liotta did a really good job improvising that. I thought, you know, they said they did it like 4 or 5 takes.
He's great because he's like, you
he's
think of
scary.
A...
scary.
You're like, how would you react to this guy? Also, I mean, Liotta's laugh is like,
it's one of the most iconic.
Legendary.
Yeah.
It's a legendary laugh. But the way he's laughing and Pesci, bing, pow, like, he's the way he's telling his stories. It's fucking incredible. Yeah. It's so good. So,
and I, you know, we were talking on the phone last night. I was like, how in the hell did Joe Pesci convince the world that he was intimidating?
It's crazy, right?
Because he's scary as hell.
He's so scary.
He really, really is. It's like 5'3".
Anyway, guys, we're going to continue moving through the show here, talking a little bit about critical and box office.
Yeah, actually, there's one more thing I wanted to say, because it was you mentioned that at the top of the show, you said that, you know, 15 minutes into the movie, you're hooked.
Yeah.
So during the test screenings for Goodfellas, you know, at the time, this was the most money that Scorsese had ever gotten to make a movie. Apparently, a lot of audiences were agitated with the way that it ended, and they thought that the Henry Hill drug-addled like paranoia was like not authentic enough or didn't seem earned. So they ended up editing it so it was happening faster with more quick cuts to give you that drug-addled point of view. But the other thing was that in the first test screening, there were 40 walkouts. Huh. In the first 10 minutes.
That's so surprising.
What is it? Because it's too violent?
I don't know. In the first 10 minutes, I mean, the first 10 minutes of the movie, I feel like you're so enchanted. Like, it's...
yeah, the only, I mean, all that happens is obviously the very beginning. So you get the stabbing and the shooting of a dude in a car that's been pig-tied. That's a little gnarly.
Pretty violent, yeah.
But then it's just awesome.
Yeah.
Like romance.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, for as, you know, as far back as I can remember, I've wanted to be a gangster.
Yeah.
How does that not intrigue you? Like, what happened? How did we get here, you know?
Wanted to be a gangster.
That whole stuff. Oh, that guy that plays Billy Bats. That's another Sopranos actor.
Oh, yeah, another fucking shine box.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, when that scene happens.
That scene's intense.
Yeah, keep him here. You're like, oh, God.
You're like, oh, no.
I know. And then how, when they kill Maury, and they're at the table, and he's like, let's not do that. He's like, yeah. No problem.
Yeah, no problem. And he's like, you know, Maury didn't even know how close he came to losing his life that night.
And then they kill him with the what's that called? A garrote? Is that what that's
a
called?
A garrote wire. Yeah.
Crazy.
Just in the car, man. Poor Maury.
So savage.
Although Maury was the guy in the movie where you're like, how has that guy lived for this long?
I know. He's such a ball buster.
Kill him the first time you met him.
Yeah. There's a few comments here in the chat I would I would like to read.
Okay.
We've got Bassist 1996 says, "Stand up and shout." Yeah, that's a song from Rockstar. Rockstar was great, says Yakavetta. Steel Dragon is my favorite band, says Danny at Oak Park. Rockstar is underrated, says
You really
Dennis
just
Gretzky.
Wanted to stop the whole show to read all the You love that movie.
I'm a big fan.
You really do. So now we can get it into critical and box office. Scorsese got $25 million from Warner Brothers Pictures. This movie was released in September of 1990, the 19th to be specific. It grossed $46 million domestic, an additional $43 foreign for a grand total of, oh no, 43,000 foreign, excuse me. So not really released overseas much for a grand total of $46.8 million. It opened at number one at 6.3. It's so funny when you look at numbers from 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Making a movie for $25 million, it seems crazy.
And this movie's got an 8.7 on IMDb. It's the 18th movie of all time.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I mean,
you okay with that?
It's a little high, but honestly, if you were to ask me to come up with 18 movies that are better than this movie, I might not be able to. I don't know. I think this, I mean, I think like the crazy thing is, I remember watching Goodfellas for the first time as such a kid in like 1995, and thinking about it in 1995, the way it was perceived like as a great movie. Like if we think about something that came out a few years ago, in the last 5 years, that we thought was like a masterpiece, like a genius piece of filmmaking. I don't know. Like let's just say it's like 12 Years a Slave or something like that, right? And I think about what it would actually take for me to consider any movie in the last 5 years to be like an all-time level movie. But then now, I feel like people talk about Godfather, Godfather Part II, and Goodfellas almost on the same level.
I do too.
I feel like they literally talk about them as like, it's possible Goodfellas is as good as those movies. And if you were going to say that, Godfather is usually talked about by people as one of the three or four best movies ever made.
Ever made.
So I think 18 could be high. It also could be totally accurate.
Do you still take Godfather over this?
I do, and it's because I just think so much of the stuff that makes Goodfellas great comes from Godfather.
Godfather 1 and 2?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not think of Godfather 1 and 2 as, like, just the same.
Yeah.
I mean, they're different movies. I just, if like, Godfather is another one that, on rewatch, when you go back to watch that movie, that's even more astounding that a movie from 1972 could still be that beautiful.
When you go
compelling.
Back and you watch Godfather, the original,
yeah,
it's still perfect.
It's incredible. I mean, the performances,
Brando's
the writing,
so
Brando's
good.
So good, and young Pacino back before his voice broke is, you know, before he cracked the voice
when
box.
He talks like this.
Yeah, it's amazing. So...
So favorite line, you have a favorite line?
I mean, we talked about a lot of the ones that come
I know,
to mind.
There's
for me.
So many good ones.
There's a lot of moments in this movie that, like a lot of Karen's moments that are great. I love when she's like, she wakes him up with the gun in his face.
Oh God, this
and
scene.
She's like holding the gun and he's like, Karen, calm down. And she's like, do you love her?
Do you love her?
Like, oh my like, God, oh, she's shit. So crazy. And then he throws her off and he's like screaming at her. He's like, I don't got to worry about getting whacked. I got to go home to this. And she
punches the wall.
And he punches the wall and then he storms out and it's like silent for a moment. She's like, I'm sorry.
It's so good. You're like, you are so fucking crazy.
She plays crazy in this amazing way. Like, I love when she throws his keys out the window. You're not going anywhere without your car.
Yes. You're like, that is the crazy wife that I need. That's the woman I need in my life to set me straight.
There's a whore living in your building. Janice Rossi, there's a whore. Mr. Superintendent, there's a whore. Everything she does, it's just my favorite. Like,
And I love at the end too. Even when she's freaking out, and she's like, "They would have found it."
What she is amazing is that scene when she's cutting open the bag of cocaine. Talk about physical acting when you're not saying anything.
Yeah,
how effective that scene is. Mm-hmm. She looks so cracked out. She looks so crazy, and then she like puts the gun in her like loose panties.
Yeah,
like there's that scene always has been memorable to me.
It's, I mean, she's the only wife that could have stuck it out with Henry Hill. I mean, honestly, she's such a badass. So I love that line.
Yeah.
My favorite line, I think it comes really early in the movie. There's actually two of them that come early. It is part of that first 10 minutes where it says, Paulie might move slow, but that's because he didn't have to move for anybody. There's something about that again, and he's just standing there, and they all stop fucking around.
Because how unbelievable is Paul Sorvino before he ever says a word in this movie?
So good. He's, just his look.
He's probably the best cast person in the movie because how effective he is as a character before he even speaks.
Oh, and the look that he gives Henry in the courtroom when he asks him to identify him, and he's just like...
I know too, because that's, you know, people talk about the ending in the last 20 minutes of this movie and how they don't like it, but I do think when Henry goes to see him and he gives him the $3,200 and he says, now I got to turn my back on you. Yep. That's such a sad scene. And it's, again, it's just such a,
it is
done so well. And his expressions, man, he really,
he's like, that's it. It's all his worth to him after all that $3,200.
Yeah.
You know? And then the other line that I love, he's like, two things I got to tell you. One, never rat on your friends.
Yeah.
Two, and always keep your mouth shut.
Always keep your mouth shut. Yeah, Jimmy Conway, man.
Jimmy Conway, bro. Yeah, so those are my two favorite lines. We got a great question here from our boy, James Spence, which is also a great time to do our Action Industries shout-out. James Spence is kind of the production coordinator of all things Action Industries. Ben and I have so much going on that James does a very, very incredible job of kind of making sure that we kind of hit the deadlines that we need, make sure that we're working on these. We got a lot of ideas, a lot of projects that are coming up, and James kind of helps make sure we're still on track, us and the entire team.
Yeah, 100%. So, James, thank you. We salute you for
salute
all
to you,
the work
my friend.
You do. So James's question
says, with movies like Hugo, Kundun, The King of Comedy, New York, New York, and Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, is Scorsese the most diverse director working today, or maybe ever? I'm adding that in myself. And what could he do next to surprise you? So I know what he could do next to surprise me. An incredible rom-com. I'm serious.
Like a really interesting.
Like a really, like an actually good, like you talk about Notebook level romance,
yeah,
but like a rom-com. Because there's one thing that Scorsese doesn't get enough credit for. He's fucking funny, dude.
His characters are really funny.
They're so funny, yeah. And he picks great writing, and he's got great comic timing. I mean, you look at Wolf of Wall Street, and you're like, that person should be just a comedy director. Whoever made that movie. Oh, it's Martin Scorsese.
I totally agree, because the more I thought about it afterwards, the more I was like, and this is on my recent rewatch of Wolf of Wall Street, the more I was just like, man, like, to be 71 years old and still have that sharp of a sense of humor, and to be that, like, to be able to make a movie with such depraved but, like, right now feeling characters,
yeah,
that's a hell of a testament to how much he still really has it. Like, he's still got it. He does not feel
100%.
Like, you watch a Clint Eastwood movie, and even the best Clint Eastwood movies in the last 10 years, they're very old fashioned, mm-hmm. and there are issues with them in some ways where you're just like, subject matter, maybe point of view, political point of view. This is like a little harder to just like feel like I'm watching something fun.
It feels like Scorsese's continued to evolve with the times.
Yeah, and you know, Spielberg, again, you talk about Spielberg. I don't really like Spielberg movies much these days. I see them all. They're okay. They're some are better than others. It's not like Ready Player One was bad, and you know, like War Horse is fine, and The Post is pretty good. Bridges of Spies is pretty good. None of them feel like they're doing anything right now that's just like, I need to see that movie.
Like, you would give up every movie you just said for Wolf of Wall Street.
I would literally erase every single movie that Steven Spielberg made after Munich. Every single one. Yes, including War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
I mean, I would give up Munich, too, honestly. I think I would probably give up every single...
Munich's good, dude.
I mean, Munich's so good, but I'm just thinking, okay, Catch Me If You Can, Minority Report, 02. Every single movie that Spielberg has made since 2002, I probably would burn in a fire to keep Wolf of Wall Street. Like,
somewhat fair.
I don't, I mean, honestly, like, Munich's not that good. It's good. It's,
yeah,
it's good.
It's
and
good.
War
it's
really of the Worlds good. Has a lot of really redeemable stuff. Like, I like a lot of War of the Worlds, but neither of those movies are even close, right? Like, it's just, there seems to be something with Spielberg's movie making in the last 10 to 15 years where it doesn't feel as fresh as it once did.
Yeah, we got a... Once again, our good friend Dong Johnson hanging out in the chat. He said, Clint is frozen in time. That's actually a pretty interesting way to put it. It's starting to feel like, not that Spielberg is frozen in time, but the next thing that he actually writes here is that Clint is stuck in his ways. That feels like Spielberg.
Yeah.
Clint feels frozen in time.
Yeah.
Scorsese feels like he's ever evolving. And The Irishman obviously felt very, very repurposed to me. But again, Wolf was not that long ago. I think he's probably the most diverse working director today. I mean, how could there's almost no one out there that has as much acclaim or respect to their name that also is still making movies that are so drastically different.
Yeah, I'm really not anybody even close. So
no.
Yeah, so I think it's a good question, James. We appreciate you asking it. So that's gonna basically wrap up. We've only got a couple minutes left here. We can either play this impressions game or we can talk a little about the face-off. I feel like we should probably talk about the face-off.
Okay.
We only have this show and one other to really talk about before next week. So big shout to Brandon Hanna, who is the associate producer now on the show. He preps the outlines for us. He had suggested a pretty good game where I guess it is a worthwhile thought. What if Cruz had been Pesci?
Am I funny to you? Funny,
like,
how?
Like I amuse you? Funny like a clown?
Funny like a clown. Funny like a clown?
Yeah.
Do I amuse you?
How am I funny? You sit here with me, you think I'm funny? Funny like a clown? I'm here to amuse you? How the fuck am I funny, Henry?
How am I funny, Henry?
Yeah.
A mighty cove.
Yeah.
I don't have to read for this.
I'm here to amuse you. How am I funny? How am I funny, Henry? Let's do some improvisational comedy.
Funny like a clown.
Excuse me, Albert. I'm funny
like a clown.
Rest in peace, Albert Finney.
Albert Finney, my boy. But yeah, so Brandon Hanna essentially had Cage versus Cruz for some fun stuff. But Action Face-Off, Commanding the Army and Action Face-Off. It's an amazing debate style show that Ben and I run every other Sunday evening. And we discuss really, really big topic. So the very first episode, what's the greatest Jack Nicholson role? The second one was the greatest comedy from the 90s. And next Sunday, not this coming.
Yeah, not this coming. Not mm-hmm. It's
in December.
No, it is this Sunday.
Is it?
Yeah.
This coming Sunday after Thanksgiving.
So the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, when mm-hmm. you guys are all back home, you're ready to hang out, we're doing our third edition. Now, the kicker on this is that to do it, there's one thing. You get to debate against Drew and myself.
Yes, you do.
So it's we pick ours. Like, if you guys ever watch movie fights, it's like being a part of a show like Movie Fights mm-hmm. against Drew or myself. Now, every single time we do the show, one of us is going to debate and the other one's going to judge the show. There's a little bit of a trivia aspect, and we encourage anybody and everybody, you've never been on a camera before, doesn't matter. A lot of people that are doing it never have been. It's available to patrons and patrons only. So patreon.com/teamaction. Even if you're a $1 patron, you can submit your choices and we can pick you to be a part of this thing. We have a bunch of new people that have upgraded and joined recently who have been submitting. And this Sunday, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, the date we should probably know offhand.
I'll look it up.
It's the first. It's the first of December.
Yes.
We are going to be debating one of two topics. We're putting it out there right now. So the two topics are either going to be greatest Martin Scorsese movie, which is inspired by this episode, mm-hmm. or it's going to be best movie of the decade, the best movie of the 2010s. Mm-hmm. You can submit on either or both. All you have to do is send an email to actionindustriesbrand@gmail.com with the subject line Action Face Off. You can even put both in the same email if you want. Pick your top two choices for either one, and we will get an email from us towards the end of the week confirming you're on the show. It streams live on YouTube on Action Industries YouTube. So that's the way this thing works. All you got to do is be a patron.
Yeah, it's super fun. We had a blast doing it. We had a ton of people that have never been on camera before. They all really, really enjoyed themselves. So send those in right now to actionindustriesbrand@gmail.com. Ben, there are three action movie categories.
Totally ridiculous. Totally legitimate. Ridiculously legitimate.
Totally legitimate. Don't even need to talk about it.
No, but there is one last thing to talk about on the show, and that's called the pitch. It's not on here, is it?
I have a feeling that you might have grabbed the papers a little too soon.
You think there's maybe a third page?
I'm 100% positive there's a third page.
Interesting. The pitch is a movie next week.
I'm so excited.
It's called Knives Out.
It's Knives Out.
Knives Out. I feel like because we've seen it so long ago now, I feel like we have to watch it again for the show.
I'm going to try to watch it again this weekend.
I can't see how I'd be able to remember all of the... Because that movie had so many little nuances and funny moments.
It's so funny. Like, even when Ryan walked in today, Ryan Nielsen, who just recently saw it, he made a reference to, like, donut holes. And I remember this whole, like, monologue that Daniel Craig has about donut holes, but it's not the donut, it's a hole, but it's not the hole of the donut.
It's a hole inside of
a hole inside a donut hole, and you're like, what? It's hilarious, but I don't really remember it. So yeah, I need to watch it again.
Yes, I can't wait. So guys, get on board with Action Face Off. Get on board with Knives Out next week on Action Movie Anatomy as we careen towards the end of the year. We have big movies coming up for the rest of the year. We've got a show over on Collider called The Action Guys. It's now goes up video now goes back up on the Collider Podcast Network and on the Collider Live channel every weekend. So you can see actually us doing our episode on top comedy of the 90s. Mm-hmm. This last week we ranked the top 10 comedies of the 90s.
A lot of fun.
It was a good episode. It was a good episode.
You heard us talk a lot about the Patreon, patreon.com/teamaction. We have a bunch of people at the highest levels donating, and we cannot thank them enough. So we're going to give a big, big shout out to our 5-star generals, the inaugural general, Breanne Chandler. We've got Jeremiah Morris, Mac Ryan, John Getz, Jake Iacovetta, Lucas, and Alec Shashek, the Shashek household, Kyle Grandinetti, and Paul DeNuzio. Those are our 5-star generals. Big time salute.
Major
to you.
Salute. Major salute.
And of course, the rest of the generals in the Army: Andrew Hayes, Billy Belford, John Patterson, Kelsey Kirkland, Nick Gilmore, Cody Seal, Kyle Hilbert, Tamir Buddha, AJ Lancaster, Sari Lemonmaki, and of course, Danny Joyce. Another big time salute to you, generals. Thank you guys so much for your support. We really, really do appreciate it.
And we'll be back same time, same place next week. Have a good one, guys.
Bye.
producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.